It's time once again for the Rose Chat Podcast, your source of inspiration and motivation to achieve the rose garden of your dreams. Join award-winning gardeners Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington as they explore the world of roses and chat with the world's top rose experts, authors, artists, curators, and more. It's time to order roses for spring delivery, and S&W Greenhouse has just what you need. From knockouts to hybrid teas, S&W has the best, from weeks, star roses and plants, and new this year, a beautiful collection of David Austin English roses that are sure to make your garden the envy of the neighborhood. Check them out online at sw-greenhouse.com. Try Haven Brand Soil Conditioners, providing generations of gardeners with a truly all-natural alternative to chemical fertilizers with their line of composted manure and alfalfa teas. Find them online at manuretea.com.
Well, hey, y'all, and welcome to another edition of the Rose Chat Podcast. Now, our guest tonight is someone who has something that I call rose fever. Susan Lyle Young was a perennial gardener in Nashville, Tennessee, when she rescued one of those bagged roses from the Kmart about 3 years ago. Since then, she's fallen in love with roses and has amassed a collection of over 250, mostly vintage and antique varieties. Cannot wait to hear her story. Now, she gardens in an urban city lot of about less than, I think, one-tenth of an acre, and is currently looking for land in the country so she can further expand her rose gardening adventures. When not tending roses, Ms. Young is an avid reader of rose history and culture, and we couldn't be happier to have her as our guest this evening.
Thank you. Susan's one of our social media friends. We met on Instagram. So if you're not familiar with Instagram, it's a social network built around sharing pictures. It's super fun. It's easy to do. And what rose gardener doesn't want to share pictures of their roses? So if you're on Instagram, you too can follow Susan and her beautiful garden by searching out her Instagram account name, which is rose.cottage. And if you're not on Instagram and you have a mobile device, check it out. I think you just might like it. Now, Susan's in the virtual studio with us, and we'll be right back to chat about her fabulous rose garden after this message from ARS. So stay with us. There's more Rose Chat coming your way.
Hi, I'm Phil Paul with the American Rose Society. My family has been growing roses for some 50 years. My wife and I have grown roses across the United States for the last 25. There's nothing more breathtaking than a beautiful display of roses in full bloom.
No matter if you're an experienced rosarian or are just beginning your first rose garden, the American Rose Society is here to help. It's a tremendous resource for making your rose garden the envy of your neighborhood. There's even a rose photography contest for members to showcase the best of the best. Each member will be published in the American Rose magazine.
We invite you to become a part of one of America's oldest horticultural societies and the home of our national floral emblem.
For more information on becoming a member of the American Rose Society and on the Rose Photography Contest, visit ars.org.
Hey, Susan, we're so glad to have you with us on Rose Chat.
Well, I'm so pleased to be here. Thank you so much.
Well, now you mentioned that bagged rose that produced you was Mr. Lincoln, and I've got to tell you, we've heard that confession a time or two. So take us back to 3 years ago and getting started with Mr. Lincoln in a bag. What was that like?
Well, I didn't know anything about roses, you know, anything at all, except that I kind of vaguely remember that my grandparents grew them, and I actually live in the house my grandfather built, so something kind of connected there, and I thought, well, I'm going to try to grow a rose, and so I got on the internet and started looking at, you know, how to grow roses, and I dug my hole, and I did my fertilizer, and, you know, the poor thing was covered in wax. you know how some of them are just like encased in wax. And so I didn't know what to do. I picked all the wax off and watered him really good, and he grew. And he bloomed, and of course, you know, the fragrance is amazing. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I should try another one. And
I'd like to know what was number two. If Mr. Lincoln was number one, what was number two?
You know, it's funny. Felicia, the hybrid musk, was number two. I thought, well, gosh, maybe I can grow roses. You know, the internet is dangerous, and just started doing some research and heard, you know, about shrub roses and thought those are probably more along the lines of what I can best care for, and got Felicia, and oh my goodness, have three Felicia now. Incredibly beautiful, healthy rose here in Nashville. And the fragrance just wafts across my teeny little garden. I love it.
I don't have Felicia. Do you have that one, Chris?
No, I don't grow that one. I can't wait to. I'm Googling it now.
Yeah.
Well, she is beautiful. She is beautiful, kind of a peachy apricot, covered in blooms in the spring flush. Blooms heavily all summer, another big, huge flush in the fall, graceful.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, just a beautiful rose.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at pictures now, and it reminds me of, it's a hybrid musk, it reminds me of Buff Beauty.
Yes.
You know, that's sort of a cream-colored rose, but it flowers very similar to that.
Very similar, and a little bit more modest in growth. You can train Felicia as a climber. But she makes like a beautiful arching shrub, just gorgeous.
Good.
I was just going to say, you know, the shade and her coloring just really fits in anywhere, you know, with any color scheme.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful.
I read that you also grow polyanthus, and I have two, one that I just started last year, Cecile Bruner. Do you grow that one?
Yes, I do. Have a few of her, and she's beautiful.
Well, I was so impressed. Somehow, I thought it was going to be a very tender rose. I've had people say in my area that they lost it, but it actually was blooming way, way beyond what some of my roses were blooming. So it took the cold pretty well at the end of the season. So is it a real healthy rose for you?
Oh, yes. All the little polyanthus that, you know, they're all different in their looks, but they all have kind of that same just continuous bloom, and they're so cheerful. They're tough. They don't have a lot of fragrance usually. That's the only, you know, the only thing to complain about. But, boy, you know, they're just great roses. I mean, I think they were kind of the original knockouts, really. They just don't stop. And that they'll fit, you know, there's always room for one more.
How true is that? We we have a shrub of Cecile Bruner, and it was one of our tornado roses. You know, we had a devastating tornado here about 4 years ago, and there was a lady who gave me roses from her mother-in-law's garden that was destroyed, and her home was destroyed in the tornado, and this was one of them. And I sent her pictures of this rose when it began to bloom in our garden afterwards, and she just called me crying. She said, "I can't believe you saved these roses."
Aww.
But it's so special, and it just blooms and blooms and blooms here.
Yeah, they're tough. They're tougher than I think we give them credit for, just because they're kind of like Mighty Mouse, you know?
Yeah.
I tell you, because you have several, are there other polyanthus that you would recommend to our listeners?
Well, I love Pearl d'Or. That's another well-known polyantha. I'm not sure if she's earth kind or not.
She is.
But She is. Mm-hmm. And she is just amazing. She reminds me a little bit of a baby Buff Beauty when she starts to fade, you know. And she's one of those roses that in the spring you'll get the deep, rich color, and then as the heat comes on, she'll fade and open up a lot, and then as the cooler weather comes on, she'll change again. And Clotilde Super, oh, what a heavenly rose. Y'all grow
yes.
her?
I just started growing that rose this past year, and it has just stunned us with its beauty.
Yeah, she's a beauty. And now she has a lot of fragrance, and she will grow quite large here. I have several of her, and she seems to like kind of partial shade the best. That's when she gets that really deep blush in the center. She's a beauty. I love the polyanthus because they're just no trouble. I don't fuss a lot in my garden.
Well, we love to hear that. We don't want, you know, we want roses that we don't have to fuss a lot with. I think that's what most people are interested in, you know. There's a limit to our time and to our resources, so we love to know the ones that don't require as much from us. You also grow noisettes. Tell us a little bit about that line of roses.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, as you can tell, I love them all. But
yeah, we understand.
I guess they're kind of languid. You know, I think of them as just kind of sprawled out on the bed tea with an iced tea. You know, they'll kind of do whatever you want them to do. Mm-hmm. They're usually pretty they have life canes. So you can prune them as a shrub. You can, I've got a couple, Celine Forestier, kind of a pale yellow with a little pink blush. I've got a couple of her going up an arch. The tea noisettes I really love, and now they might not be that hardy, but they're very fragrant. I'd say they bloom as much or more than a modern rose or an Austin rose, and they're very graceful and romantic. You know, they remind me kind of that old South kind of feel. And really, they may get composted manure in the spring, and I try to water them well when we have a drought. But other than that, they just don't get much care. They don't get disease. They don't black spot. They're healthy, beautiful, easy roses. Really, I have a few difficult roses that I absolutely love for maybe the four or five blooms I get from them each summer. You know, the prima donnas.
Yeah, they're worth it. Sometimes they're just worth it.
But, you know, in my mind, there just aren't a whole lot that are worth it.
You know, someone else who loves noisette roses is our friend P. Allen Smith. And, is sort of on a mission to help restore the noisette. You know, that's one of the roses that are sort of indigenous to North America. So he's sort of been on a mission to help restore those to American gardens. And Trace and I visited his rose garden a couple of years now at Moss Mountain Farm. And I'll tell you, the roses on display there will just blow your mind.
Oh, I have no doubt. And, you know, I think if everybody who enjoyed their roses just tried a couple, you know, a hypermusk or a polyantha or, even an old hybrid tea, of them, they would see how generous they are with their blooming and their health, and they just don't require the coddling that you think of with the modern rose. And you know, the modern roses I grow, I give them 3 years, and then, you know, they get the shovel prune if they're just not
we're with you.
A lot of people say, well, I'm just not going to dig them up. I'm going to leave them. But, you know, and I used to sort of be of that mindset, but there's just so many that will just reward you with bloom after bloom after bloom. And you know, I've just kind of come to the realization that it's okay to dig those up, but don't do that.
It is. I think because they have so many of them, you know, are named after people or fun places or whatever. We just kind of want to think of them as human, but plant. I mean, they're really no different than a weed. You know, they've just been hybridized, and I have so little space that I've just gotten ruthless. And I tell you, it was hard at first, but now I just don't have any problem. And I always see, you know, if somebody would like a rose that I'm not, you know, going to keep. It's hard to throw them away. But you know, somebody else who wants to coddle them, you know, a little bit more.
Well, and I think you're onto something too. You know, what doesn't do so well or doesn't meet your expectations may be a gem in someone else's garden.
Absolutely.
And, so, you know, the ones we dig up, we take them to our Rose Society meetings and, you know, raffle them off or give them away or share them with our neighbors. You know, we've infiltrated our neighbors' backyards now with roses. One lady said, are you ever going to stop that?
Believe me, I have been kind of eyeballing the sunny backyards around me thinking, I wonder if they could take a few.
Yeah, you should say, let me gift you one of these noisettes, and I'll just come and visit. Yeah.
I'll help you grow it.
Yeah.
I find that one of my favorite times at our Rose Society meetings is when there's a few cars that pull up and they start by raising their trunk. So you know that they have something to share. And it's like everybody goes, woo, let's see what's leaving one garden and coming to mine. I've got some awesome roses out of the trunk of those cars.
that's where the best ones usually come from because people, you know, have cared for them and they either don't have the room or need something else. And so it's a well-cared-for rose.
I'm curious.
And, you know, that's important, too, that you – especially when they're, you know, younger, you really got to, you know, I think water really is the best fertilizer, the best disease preventative. I just find that if mine don't dry out, they're just so much healthier.
Yeah, absolutely.
That reminds me of a story. I was a florist for many years, and we had a driver, and she was an elderly woman and just filled with wisdom, but she would run in between her deliveries and she'd say, I've got to get me a big glass of water. I'm a steam engine and I need water to make steam. And I think it's true of our plants too. If we keep them well hydrated, they're going to be a lot healthier and need less of everything else. Susan, I've got to tell a story on you. Susan and I were beginning to contact each other after we met on social media, and I was begging her for more pictures of her garden, and she sent me to a photo sharing app that she has and to an album. But I have to tell you, the name of the album is Poor but Rose Rich, and in there she is. All of these beautiful roses, and every time I see that album, Poor but Rose Rich, I mean, I feel like we are twins from different mothers. I'm sure every rose grower out there can identify with a rose album that says, Poor but Rose Rich.
I love that. That is awesome.
Well, you know, it's gone beyond a hobby. It's a lifestyle now.
Oh, absolutely. We so get that. You're talking to two people, especially, who get that.
Yeah.
And many of our friends that are listening get that, too.
Yes.
Now, one of the pictures that I fell in love with in there was Sambroy. Now, you've
only been
growing them for 3 years, and this rose, Chris, this rose is absolutely huge if you haven't seen it. And I'm wondering, what are you doing to Sambroy? Because I have one, and she just hasn't gotten that big yet.
Well, you know, I don't think I really accepted this until recently, but, you know, there are some plants of the same variety that just don't do as well as others. I mean, I can have two of the same roses, and, you know, have y'all noticed that? One will really thrive, and the other just never seems to get going. So when I give something a couple of years and it's not moving on and I love it, you know, I'll get another one, you know, from a different source. But, you know, I don't know what to tell you special about that rose. It, you got to remember, too, that when we take photos sometimes, you know, they're pretty close up. So she's not a big, huge bush. You know, she's just kind of finding her way. But I try to keep her in a hot spot with, you know, some good midday shade. I want to put her on the my brick wall here on my house facing south, but I think that would just cook her, you know? So she may be getting too much sun. She may, you know, and that's the other thing, too. I don't know if you noticed in my photo album, but I have a lot of roses in pots. And I, you know, and I move them around until I can kind of find out where they're happy. And she really does get that full-on morning sun and then pretty deep shade for the hottest part of the day and then that kind of low evening sun, pretty hot. But I'll be happy to send you some cuttings of mine.
Oh, wouldn't that be lovely? Wouldn't that be lovely? Now, I might hold you to that. You better be careful what you promise. I might hold you to that.
I hear that trunk opening.
You hear that trunk? Yeah, well, you know, I'm getting all excited just thinking about it.
We love to
now,
share.
Oh, we sure do. We sure do.
Yeah.
One of the things that we mentioned in your introduction was that you have the pre-World War II hybrid teas. I'd like to hear about some of those that you're growing.
Oh, Teresa, they are so beautiful. They have grace, and I like those big blousy roses, you know, most of which you see in maybe the once blooming bourbons or albas or damask. You know, I just love those the big blown blooms, and I'm sure y'all are familiar with Vintage Gardens, the wonderful nursery, yes. And as they kind of started to phase out their business, I just started thinking, okay, you know, what do they have that hardly anybody else has? And and there were so many of those 1900 to 1940-ish hybrid teas that are beautiful, and I just kind of got hooked. And they're kind of hard to find, but there are still a few places that grow them. And I think my favorite would have to be Catherine Louise Breslau. She reminds me, or let's say Pat Austin reminds me a lot of Miss Breslau. It's that coppery apricot. And really the bloom looks different almost every day, you know, from bud to full blown. It's just always a beautiful rose. And, you know, some of them are kind of weak growers and they go, but Radiance, so I'm sure you know Radiance. The Doctor is a wonderful rose. And a lot of them are Mrs. Mrs. Lovell Swisher is a great rose. Mrs. Henry Morse. just wonderful kind of shrubby teas that don't need a lot of pruning, and have that kind of, you know, that older look to them, a softer look maybe. And I'll be happy to send you cuttings of those as well.
You mentioned Vintage Gardens. Now, are they still in business?
No, sadly.
Okay.
They're not. I think it got too much for the gentleman who was running the business, and now they have a nonprofit that's called Friends of Vintage Roses. And they're mostly growing the roses that he had on display out there in Sebastopol, I think California is where they are. And, you know, their website is still online, and it is a wonderful source for information and identification. It's very educational. He is a man who never met a rose he didn't love.
It's sad to see those things go. I hope someone will pick up that gauntlet and run with it again.
When you get a rose that you feel like is kind of rare, you know, to me, I feel an obligation to pass it on to folks who are going to care for it, you know, to folks who are interested in growing it and keeping those kind of older, unique roses around. Because, you know, to me, there's nothing sadder than going to Help Me Find and seeing this rose and it says not in commerce. And you think, well, what?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of hurts your feelings, doesn't it?
Yeah. Not in commerce. Really, I will be glad to send y'all. I'll send y'all a list of what I grow, and you let me know, and I'll be glad to send some cuttings your way. I'd root them if I could. I can't root.
Well, we need to hook you up with the folks in the Nashville Rose Society who, like, you know, they could root popsicle sticks, I think, if they. I don't have a lot of luck with that either, but, you know, I rely on my friends who know how to do it.
Me too.
Well, in our society, we also talk a lot about budwood. So, you know, we have a couple of people in our society, and we're passing off budwood to them. So I will be glad if I get a little budwood from you. I'll be glad to pass it on for a little help from my friends here, too.
Wonderful. Well, you know, it takes a village.
It does. Well, Susan, let's change gears here just a little bit. You mentioned that you were reading a book this winter about Susan Irvine's rose garden. So can you tell us a little bit about Susan?
Oh, what a wonderful book. She is such an interesting person, someone I really admire, because she literally just has no fear. She does not have that internal mechanism that most of us have that says, well, yeah, that's crazy. You can't do that. And she lived in Australia, and she starts off the book talking about how she wanted to kind of rehabilitate a small cottage and some land and have a garden. And she always drove by a place on her way to work that was you know, looking like it was about to fall in. And one day she saw that it was going to be at auction, and she went to auction, and she bid on it, and by gosh, she won the auction and discovered that she was now the owner of I don't know how many tens of acres.
So she went from no land to tons of land.
Tens of acres, and there was a quarry, there was a lake, there was, she created a bird refuge there. She just decided, well, this is going to be my own private paradise, and she was very methodical about it. There was a cottage on the property that was so overgrown She did not know until after she bought it that it was made of native bluestone. So you can imagine how beautiful that was. And she just started with the bulbs and a few roses close to the house and then kind of expanded. And, you know, one thing she said that was so funny, she said, if we needed any kind of dirt for the garden, we just made another pond.
Oh, to have the land to do, just make another pond. Let's just make another.
Yes. all kinds of flowering fruit trees. Oh, it just sounded like a little heaven on earth. And I like to browse the online used bookstores for books about roses.
Mm-hmm.
And just picked that one up for, you know, $1.50. And she has really gotten me interested in flowering fruit trees and different
mm-hmm.
types of crab apples and cherries and just a woman. And I think she started all of this, y'all, when she was 58.
I see that just gives us all hope. That just gives us all hope. That inspires all of us to live our dreams. So I'm
it,
sure
it
that,
was.
That her quest for land just encouraged you in your plight to get more land to grow more roses and maybe fruit trees too. Maybe you'll add fruit trees too.
Oh, I would love to. You know, and I keep trying to think of her when that little voice in my head says, you know, you're crazy.
Well, we're going to use that too. I haven't read the book, but we're going to use that from Susan too. When I think, you know, I need a little encouragement. Yeah, we'll all just jump in on that bandwagon.
Very
now,
encouraging.
I know you've done,
yeah.
Very encouraging. Now, I know you've done a little traveling, so tell us about some of the rose gardens you visited.
Well, most recently I went down to the Heritage Rose Foundation Conference down in New Orleans. And it was wonderful there. All their tea roses were still blooming. This was in November. Evidently, they bloom just about all year except for maybe January, the curator at the Louis Armstrong Garden told us. But we toured the garden, and, of course, it was there at Armstrong Park, which had been horribly flooded with Katrina. He talked about how he didn't have any electricity or running water there for months.
Mm-hmm.
There's an auditorium on the property, an old historic auditorium where they used to have the debutante balls in New Orleans that still is just shuttered. The city hasn't been able to, you know, clean it up. So to see all these old 4 to 6 feet high tea roses.
Wow.
Yeah, just in amazing shape was incredible. And to bloom, I mean, they were blooming like they do here in June. So,
wow.
Yeah, it was just gorgeous.
Now, didn't you also on that tour, didn't you get to visit our good friend Peggy Martin's Rose Garden as well?
Oh, my goodness.
That's what I want to hear. Oh, my goodness.
What a wonderful person is Peggy Martin. She is a wonderful woman. And she did. She opened her home and her garden to all of us. And fortunately, she had most of her roses labeled. So I would take a picture of the bloom and then a picture of the label so I knew when I got
mm-hmm.
home what I had to have. she had a rêve d'or that it was gigantic, 15-foot long canes, blooming. Oh, it was gorgeous. And a found rose, Richard's rose, that I was not familiar with. Oh, it was beautiful. And, you know, it's so good to see roses in bloom, and to see how they grow and how they look when they're well cared for and to think, oh, I have to have that one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just And she had all kinds, too. She had modern. She had Austin's. She had Polyanthus, Hybrid Musk. She had them all. Her whole back garden was full. And she had bushes up in the front, too, up near her house of these beautiful old teas.
Well, I just had an email from Peggy today, and she's going to be on the show to talk to us about the foundation. So I'm sure you got to see our good friend Stephen Scanello, too, as a part of that.
Yeah,
doing wonderful
yes.
work with the foundation.
I tell you, it's not often that I want to sit in a room and hear a lecture. But when you go to the Rose Foundation conferences, the speakers are always, are always fascinating. That we had a speaker talk about an old plantation down there and roses that were grown, and we toured a couple of plantations and a Creole plantation, a tour of gardens in the French Quarter. You know, it was the Heritage Rose Foundation is a wonderful, wonderful organization. They do great things, and they are great people. I really, travel mostly now to see roses.
I love
that. We did that. We so do. Well, that's
it's
on
rare,
my 20. It's on my 20, at least my 2016 list to attend one of those Heritage Rose Foundation conferences. It just sounds so interesting. And to just to be around the people who are caring for these heritage roses, I just want to learn from them, and I'm looking forward to attending one of those. So thanks for the update.
Well
we're coming to the end of our time
together.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to say one more thing to you and Chris. You know, the trunks come up at those meetings.
They do. Now, Chris, we know we have to go. The trunks come up.
Yeah,
there you
see, I knew I was missing out by not going this year. So.
Yeah, I've seen pictures on Facebook of Stephen Scaniello's truck or truck.
Oh, goodness.
When he goes a visiting, he never comes away empty-handed, that's for sure. Well, it's been a delight to have you and to hear about your experiences, and I'm inspired, and I'm sure our listeners are inspired to try something new, and we just appreciate your spending your evening with us.
Well, I have absolutely just really enjoyed myself. It's not every day I'm asked to speak to folks about roses, and I really enjoyed doing it, so thank you for having me.
Well, enjoy the rest of your winter, and you can count down to spring with us, and before long, we'll have new blooms to share.
Well, thank you.
Well, friends, we've come to the end of another broadcast of the Rose Chat podcast. Now, Teresa and I will be on the road all this year telling the Rose Chat story and having so much fun along the way. You can check out our speaking and public appearance schedule at rosechatpodcast.com. Now, visit us often at rosechatpodcast.com, where you'll find our full library of shows, plus valuable notes, links, growing tips, and insights from our guests. Until next time, happy gardening from your friends at Rose Chat.
Thanks for listening to the Rose Chat podcast with Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington. Hear previous podcasts via our website, rosechatradio.com, or listen to this podcast via iTunes and Stitcher apps. Be sure and give us a 5-star rating and share this show with your social networks. Your friends will thank you. Join us next time for another edition of The Rose Chat. Rose Chat is a production of the Rose Chat Media Group, Birmingham, Alabama.